Well, tonight we'll be in Psalm 140. We looked at 139 last week. And this is a psalm written by David, primarily for corporate worship. Again, like we saw last week, not all the psalms were written in that way, but it was primarily to be used when the people would gather for worship to sing, to pray, to worship. It could be used in the context of private worship, but the primary focus was for public worship. Now, when you think about the life of David, I don't know what you think about. I think of, usually the first thing that comes to my mind is him and Bathsheba. I'll be honest with you, that's usually the first thing that comes to my mind, maybe because I'm just negative, I guess, but I think of the bad first. He made some pretty boneheaded choices in life. But it wasn't always that way. If you go back when he was selected to be king, here he was, a shepherd in the Bethlehem Hills, the youngest son, a nobody, and God chose him, a man who had a heart for God. And even though he made choices from time to time that weren't so great, some of his choices got him in trouble, but some of his choices to do the right things got him in trouble. And I think that sets the context for this particular psalm, because beyond the enemies, the choices of David caused him in his early adult life to be a man with a big bullseye painted on his back. You're going, what do you mean? Well, when David understood he was going to be king, there was already a king. You know that, right? A guy named Saul. And when David revealed that he was to be king, that made him an instant enemy of this guy. And there's some really interesting stories that go along with that situation. There's a story told of David when he was hiding from King Saul down at En-Gedi, which are the springs of Gedi near the Dead Sea. And it's kind of humorous when you read it from our perspective, but it's kind of interesting to the day. King Saul had been pursuing David and gotten back into this area where a fresh spring was, and he went to relieve himself. And David was in the cave where Saul was taking care of his business. And he could have come up and killed him had he wanted to. And instead, he comes up and cuts a piece of the cloth off of his robe. And as King Saul is walking away, David goes, "King," and shows him the piece of his garment and says, "I could have, but you're God's anointed." And yet he had a bullseye on his back by this guy whom he could have killed. Now, you and I have enemies of sorts, whether they're enemies because we make poor choices or because we're doing the will of God, because we're doing what God has told us to do. We're following him with our heart. What we're going to discover is that there are going to be people who stand against you if you're going to do the right thing. And what we need to do, I think, as we begin thinking about this idea of deliverance, is to seek God and make sure that we don't make enemies because of dumb choices, but because we're being faithful. But when they come, what do? That's Psalm 140. Look at verse 1. "Deliver me, O Lord, from evil men. Preserve me from violent men who plan evil things in their heart and stir up wars continually. They make their tongue sharp as a serpent's, and under their lips is the venom of asps." Selah. What I want you to see, first of all, is God is our deliverer. He's our deliverer. I don't know about you, but I like that thought. He's our deliverer in the face of struggles. In this psalm, we find the words of a man facing yet another trial in life. He's being pursued, I think, when he at least initially began to put this psalm together before he wrote it, by a king who had been rejected by God, King David, Saul himself. And as David was facing this renewed attack against his person, he writes this psalm, this song, this prayer to God. And he wants to encourage others in corporate worship to cry out to God and to understand that God is our deliverer. He's our deliverer. David acknowledges there are evil men, there are violent men, that they're there, they're all around. He understands there are people who will intentionally attack those who have been set aside by God for his faithful service. And in his day, just like in ours, there are people who hated the things of God, that hated the people of God, that hated the ways of God among humanity. Now notice the graphic description of these people. I think it's interesting the way he writes this. They make their tongues sharp. And they have venom under their lips as an asp. That's not a flattering picture, by the way, if you didn't notice. By the way, this doesn't flatter anybody. Yet David does grasp a reality here that we need to be aware of, and we'll get to that in application, is this, that there are different kinds of people on the planet. There are people who hate the things of God, and there are people who love the things of God. I find that interesting that it's just very black and white to David. And in spite of this ugliness and in spite of these attacks in his life, David holds to a firm belief that God is his deliverer. He says, it doesn't matter what happens. God's going to deliver you. I believe God can deliver me from this. He is capable of moving in a way that is mysterious and amazing at the same time, that is supernatural and wonderful. He's God. He's my deliverer. He believed that God was his deliverer. Now, how do you take that and apply it to life? This is pretty deep. You ready? God is your deliverer. Do you believe that? Do you believe that God, the God of the universe, can deliver you? See, I think sometimes we go, oh yeah, he can deliver them and he can take them and he can help them, but I don't know about me. I want you to understand that God can deliver you. But he doesn't have to work in your timetable. When you look at the life of the writer of this psalm, what you find is a man who was not looking to become king. Did you know that? He was a shepherd. He was a nobody out in the Bethlehem Hills. He was a good shepherd. He took care of his sheep. He would fight off lions and bears and tigers. Oh my. Hello, come on. He took care of his business, okay? He wasn't looking for power. But God came what? Looking for him through a man named Samuel. So he receives this call, and God says, here's what I have for you. I'm going to take you down this direction. I'm going to take you down this way, and here's my thought. But here's what's going to happen. You're going to face trials. But God, I thought following you was going to be easy. If it was supposed to be easy, then why would he be called our deliverer? Hello? What's he going to deliver you from if it's not a trial and a struggle and a difficult moment? He's your deliverer. If it were easy, we would have a different name here. What David is showing us through the beginning of this psalm is that God is fully capable of delivering his child in his time. And I'm not even sure a quick delivery from trials would have even been the best thing for David. You know, David became who he was, not because he didn't face trials, but because he did face trials and let God work through his life. How often do you and I go, well, God, I wish you'd just deliver me from this. Get me out of this struggle. Get me out of this pain. Get me out of this mess. God, get me out of this. But that's where God's teaching you the best. It's in the midst of the struggle and the trial. Maybe his plan isn't to deliver you from, but deliver you through. Oh, I don't like that. The other side of this coin is this, and we talked a little bit about it this morning, just kind of tied in tonight's message as well, is the reality of evil. You and I would be foolish to think that everyone around us is basically good. Because the truth of the matter is this, a heart apart from God is inherently wicked. David recognizes that evil is all around. He says, it's all around here, and I need you to deliver me. So God is our deliverer. Look at verses 4 and 5. Guard me, O Lord, from the hands of the wicked. Preserve me from violent men who have planned to trip up my feet. The arrogant have hidden a trap for me, and with cords they have spread a net. Beside the way they have set snares for me, Selah. God is not only our deliverer, he is our defender. Defender. He says, God, would you be my defender? Would you guard me? Would you take care of me? He asks God, would you guard me in the face of these ugly trials that are coming my way? Would you take care of me? You might say, well, what ugly trials? Violent people who plan to trip up his life. As you look at his story, there's all kinds of people that went after him. Arrogant people who were hiding to trap and entrap him and to do something to mess him up. Arrogant people who spread nets for him. Wicked people who were setting snares for him. Notice the ugliness of those who would damage, and even if they could, destroy David. Into the midst of this ugliness, David cries out not only for deliverance, but he says, okay, God, if deliverance is going to happen down the road and through your time and your plan, then I would like for you to be my defender. When you think about the life of David, you have to wonder, where was God to allow him to go through such difficult trials? Why did he have to be on the run? Why did he have to be here? Why did he be there? The short answer was this, or is this, God was right there with him all the time. You know, you'd have to wonder, or I have to wonder, what would David's life have looked like had God not allowed him to go through the trials of his early life? What would he look like? We don't know because he went through them. But what would have happened had he missed out on those? Would he have become the man who had mercy to deal with enemies the way he did? Would he have had the wisdom to administer a large and growing country like he did? And what I want you to see is this, is God was surely his defender carrying David through the trials he faced in order to bring him on the other side a better man. He says, God, would you defend me through this? That's the promise I want you to see tonight. God will defend you. He'll defend you. The big idea is simply this. While God may not deliver you immediately from the trials, you go, God, deliver me. Please take me out. Get me out of this. I don't want to go through this. As a follower of God, he will be your defender if you're his child as you go through the struggles. How many of you have asked God to deliver you from an impending trial, yet God's answer was not deliverance, but defense? I will be your bulwark is the old word. I'll be your strength. In our day of easy faith, I think it's too easy that we assume that God will not allow you and me to have any trials in life. It'll be easy. I gave my heart to Jesus. I walked the aisle. Hello? The real potential for growth and development comes not from deliverance, but from allowing God to lead you through those trials, to be your defender. This is where you and I can hold to a great promise in his word that God will never what? Leave us or... Oh, see, y'all know that one. But do we believe it? Maybe the real issue is centered on an understanding we need to add to our lives. God doesn't promise an easy life. God promises to be with us regardless of what we deal with in life. It seems to me that many Christ followers in this day have been sold a bill of goods. We told you this. Follow Jesus and everything will be what? Peachy keen. Is not how I would have phrased it, but we'll call it okay. It'll be good. But it doesn't take very long, if you haven't noticed, of following the Lord before you realize what? There's some real trials out there. There's some real struggles out there. There's some real difficulties out there. You're going, but I thought I was a child of God. Well, I thought I am a child of God. I thought I was set free from. I didn't think I had to deal with. Hello? That's not the promise of the Scriptures. I think this is where some have a crisis of faith, not because they have weak faith, but because they have an incomplete understanding of who God is. David understood this. While he surely didn't like the circumstances he faced, he said, I do not have to face them, what? Alone. Oh, you need to hear this. God would guard him from the hands of the wicked. God would preserve him from violent men. That doesn't mean he wasn't going through trials. It doesn't mean it wasn't going to be always easy. But God was going to carry him through. And that is what God is promising to you and me, I believe, as well. If you're his child, he's going to bring you through, even if the trial gets the best of you. He's with you. So God's our deliverer. He's our defender. Look at verse 6. I say to the Lord, you are my God. Give ear to the voice of my pleas for mercy, O Lord. O Lord, my strength, the strength of my salvation. You've covered my head in the battle, in the day of battle. Grant not, O Lord, the desires of the wicked. Do not further their evil plot, or they will be exalted. Selah. Here's what I want you to see. God is our deliverer. He's our defender. He's also our director. He's the one that gives us the pathway. and the strength to go through. David makes it very clear. He has a belief that says this: God, I believe that even though trials are coming my way and headed my way, that you will hear my cry for mercy. You are my strength of salvation. You're the one who's going to cover my head in the day of battle. You're the one who's going to stop the desires of the wicked. You're the one who's going to bring me through it because you're directing my path. There's a lot going on in these three verses, but at the heart of it all is this. David had a belief that God could and would direct his path through the battles to come. He said, God, I believe you're going to direct me through this. I may not see the big picture. I may not get the GPS map layout for me, but you got it. You know where you're going to lead me. He believes God can hear, he would give strength, and he would cover his head in the battle. And while these are terms of a military overtone, you can easily see how they apply to life. David is about to face battles in his life that are ultimately going to lead him to become king, but the issue here is much broader than a mere monarchical ascension. His understanding is this: God is the one directing the pathways of his life in order to do what? To bring glory to God. He says, it's not about me. David believed God was at work in his life, directing him to bring him through the trials that were going to come. And that, let me tell you something, that's a far cry from where most of us live our lives. We have an understanding of life that says this: it's all random, or worse, we get to make our own destiny. Well, that's such a bunch of, that's the word we'll use. What I want you to understand is God, you know this, you've heard this, if you've been through experiencing God, you know this. God is what? Always at work. He's always at work, and his plan is always to bring about the very best for your life, and that includes directing the paths of his followers as well as affecting the pathways of the wicked. You know, when you look at the Old Testament, you find some interesting characters that God used to accomplish his purpose. You're thinking, Jeremiah, Isaiah, how about Pharaoh? How about Nebuchadnezzar? You're going, but those weren't even followers of God. No, but God directed even their paths to accomplish his purpose and plan through the world. God is that big. He can accomplish what he wants to. He is the director. Just like a movie needs a director, so does your life. In fact, I would posit your life does have a director. So the question isn't who's directing your life. The question isn't is there a director for your life, but the question is who is your director? Who's in charge? Students, I would ask you that question. Who's in charge? You're going, where's my life going? Good answer. But where is God leading? Who is leading? Is it God? There's room in this understanding to see God ultimately directing and affecting all of our life, but the closer question I want to ask you is this: who's directing your life? Ask it for yourself. Who's directing my life? David made it right clear here, I think, in the psalm. He says, the one who is to lead and guide and direct my life is none other than God. I got to ask you, is that the cry of your heart? Are you really wanting God to lead you? Do you really want God to direct your life? Do you really want God to be in charge of your life? He wants to be in charge of your life. The question is, will you let him? He wants to be. David declared, God's the one to lead me. Then come on down, look at verse 9. We may finish early tonight. As for the head of those who surround me, let the mischief of their lips overwhelm them. Let burning coals fall upon them. Let them be cast into fire, into miry pits, no more to rise. Let not the slanderer be established in the land. Let evil hunt down the evil man, the violent man speedily. Now that is some pretty graphic language. Here's what I make of that. God's our deliverer. He's our defender, our director. He's also our, and you're going to think this seems almost not right, our destroyer. You're going, huh? He's our destroyer? What does that mean? Hang in there with me. We find a principle that is, let's just be honest, is really uncomfortable to a lot of modern followers of God. God is depicted here as what? As a destroyer. That's kind of the summary of the thought here. For those of us who hold to a God is love mentality, we look at this and go, that doesn't seem right. David believed that God was love. Don't misunderstand. But he believed that God was a whole lot more than just love. and that love is expressed in multiple ways. Notice the cries of David. Let their mischief overwhelm them. Let burning coals fall on them. Let them be cast into fire. Let not the slanderer be established, and let evil hunt down the violent men. That's harsh. I don't know how to take a positive spin on that verse, I have to tell you. I'm trying to find one, and I don't see one. Because God is being asked by David to be a destroyer. You're going, why would he do that? In many ways, the psalm keeps rising in despair because for David, he's coming. I want you to catch the visual of the entire psalm. And we really haven't laid that out yet, but hang in there with me. The idea is he's drawing closer and closer to God. And what he's getting closer to God, he's seeing God's heart and how much God hates evil. We saw a little bit of this last week in Psalm 139. Catch the imagery. As he's moving closer to God, his holiness is revealed. And that leads to an evil and a wickedness being pushed aside before, in the end, what happens is finally destroyed. David is expressing a trust here, a belief, a faith, if you will, that God could provide for his every need. And that would include, in God's time and in God's plan and in God's purpose, the removal of evil from around him. You're going, why would he do that? I don't know. It doesn't preclude the activity of David being faithful to fight, which he does, but it does do this. It says, God, I believe you are going to bring the victory in the end. Here's what I want you to see. In the end, God wins. I wrote it this way. God will defeat his enemies. That is a very foreign concept to many modern ears. We think, well, why would God destroy anybody? I would want to ask the question another way. Why would anyone reject the free offer of God's love for their life? Why would someone say, you mean you sent your son to die on the cross so that I could be redeemed and forgiven? No, thank you. What? That makes no sense. At least not to me. In the end, God is going to win. And we're not exempted from being faithful to God and to being involved in the things that he's called us to do. But ultimately, in the end, it's God who's going to defeat his enemies. And again, that doesn't mean you do nothing. But the ultimate victory is not found by the activities and action of people, but in the amazing work of God through his people. You know, there's a movement in Christianity today where believers are encouraged to speak to the enemy. You know who the enemy is, right? Satan, yeah. You're supposed to go and speak to him, and you get out of here. You don't have any authority here, and you have no place here. You know what? How about we talk to the one who has the greater authority than you or me? God, would you intervene? Would you work? God, would you? Why don't we want to talk to that old knucklehead? Right? Let's talk to the one who can make a difference. I think the better way to speak to this is to the one who has the ultimate power and the final authority that can accomplish what he wants to do, and he can move in his time and his way and his purpose. And because the reality is this, your strength, my strength, worthless. But his strength, in many ways, there's a reminder here that God wins in the end. So the question isn't who is going to win. Rather, the question ought to be, what side are you on? Jesus came revealing he's the only one, the only way for a person to be redeemed, the only way for a person to be forgiven. He's the only way to be reconciled to God. And once you receive his call for forgiveness, what you find is that you have moved from the losing team to the what? To the winning team. In the end, God wins. Whose side are you on? Well, why do we have to pick sides? It's just the way it is. One last thing I want you to see. Look at verse 12. I know that the Lord will maintain the cause of the afflicted and will execute justice for the needy. Surely the righteous will give thanks to your name. The upright shall dwell in your presence. So God's our deliverer, our defender, our director, our destroyer. And I think this is a psalm where he's getting closer and closer to the presence of God and seeing more of God. He says, ultimately, God, you are my dwelling. Imagine with me, if you can, the day of your death. Oh, it's going to be sad. Maybe. Imagine with me, you stop breathing here, and as a child of God, listen, you open your eyes in the presence of Holy God to dwell there, how long? Forever. Oh, this is the long-term destination of those who have received the offer to be a follower of God. God becomes our what? Our dwelling place. We're with him. What does heaven look like, Pastor? I don't know. Does it have streets of gold? I don't know. Probably has something nicer than gold. I don't think it matters what it looks like, because the location isn't so, the visuals are not nearly as important as the one who's in the middle of it all. He's our dwelling. That's what I want you to see. David understood that he would not attain perfection in this life, but he said, I will see progress. I will move forward. There's supposed to be some progress in my life, I think is what he's saying. David progressed through his life to be a man who, you know what he did in his latter days? He was getting the nation ready to build the temple. That's what he did with his time as he was going into retirement. Think about that one. He was massing the stuff. He wasn't allowed to build the temple, but he got it all together. So when Solomon took over, what happened? Boom, they started building that big old place. He says, I want to be faithful until the day I die. Man, you're talking about a guy coming from a long way, herding sheep near Bethlehem, to being the king of a thriving nation. But that wasn't the end of his process. And why did all that happen? Because he said, I believe that you, God, will lead me, that you will maintain the cause of the afflicted, that you will bring justice for the needy. He said, I'm going to spend my days doing this, thanking you and dwelling in your presence, and then one day I'm just going to go on and be with you the rest of eternity. Here's what I want you to see. God can bring lasting peace to your life. Where God is allowed to reign, where God is invited to rule, here's what happens. You find lasting peace. You're going, but it seems like there's a lot of struggle and strife and all kinds of stuff around. Yeah, it's okay. If God's in the middle and you're with God, y'all get it? There's peace. Where God's allowed to reign, where he's invited to rule, there is peace. Not because of the goodness of the people involved, but because of the greatness of the God who's worshipped. You know, there's coming a day when God is going to be exalted among his people in such a way that there is no other answer than to say this, look what God is doing. I don't know about you, but I long for the day when God's exalted, when God's glorified. We had our meeting this afternoon and talking about missions in Mexico. I want to close with this story because I think it's appropriate and it kind of ties into how God works even when we don't see it. A number of years ago, we led a group into into San Luis de la Paz. And honestly, that mission trip was a disaster from our perspective. We came into the country, we flew into León, and as we're leaving the airport, headed over to the town we were going to stay in, the missionary looks over at me and says, oh, by the way, it was Saturday, by the way, he says, oh, by the way, Monday, I'm leaving country for training. Now, we've invested airline tickets, and we're there till Friday or Saturday. I said, and what do when you leave? He says, oh, I'll give you the keys to the van. You can take the group. And y'all can do the project. Now, I got to tell you, I'd never driven in Mexico before. So They had a little Chevy Astro van. You remember those? I called it a bread box on wheels. Just a box, you know. And we packed eight of us in there. And he showed me how to drive from the village we were staying in over to San Luis de la Paz. And he went with us Sunday afternoon. We went to church in the little village there, went to the people and worshiped with them. And then we went over to the town to show us where the town was and how to get there. And he says, let me show you another way to get back. I said, no. Show me one way if I'm going to do this by myself. So he showed me one way to drive back. And then we go Monday, and he says, here's what I want you to do. We're going to take the Gospels. We're going to hand out Gospels. That's what we were doing. He said, I want you to go into all these streets. Just y'all go that way, and y'all go that way, and you go that way, and we'll meet back up later, wherever I'm at. I got to tell you, I looked at some of my ladies and gentlemen as well, and they had a look on their eyes of terror. He's going to do what to us? And I looked at him, and I said, Señor, no. He was an American. Anyway, I said, let's go a little bit more organized. So what we did is we planned the day out, and we laid out some maps. We went down to the city hall and got some maps of the town. We said, okay, you work this street, and you work this street, and now you know where you are, and we got through it. But I have to tell you, we left after the week was over, and I have pictures of me driving through a street about that wide. I was convinced that God was going to do nothing in that town. But God. 2 years ago, we were back in Mexico on a mission trip. And the guy that owns the Beltone hearing aid franchise for Mexico is a Baptist, go figure, who lives in Brownsville. So he travels in and out of the country a lot, and he has to be careful because of his perceived wealth, where he stays and what he does. Well, he stopped to stay with us at this missionary residence house that we're staying in a couple of months, and he starts telling us God's doing some cool things in our country, and he's saying God is moving here, and let me tell you about this town that God has started a Bible study in the group and this and that, and we're kind of going, oh, cool, man, you know, because, you know, we like that stuff, and we say, well, where is it? And he tells us San Luis de la Paz. St. Louis of the Peace is what it means in English. And we looked and said, oh, look what God can do when he's in charge, when he is released, not because of our ingenuity, not because of our intelligence, not because of our wisdom, but because simply we're faithful to God. Listen, you take those steps of faith. You trust God to be your deliverer. He will. Here's the conclusion. God's plan is this, to deliver you as his child to a good place. You mean a perfect place? No, a good place. The place he wants you to be. Let's pray. Father, we do thank you for this evening. We thank you for the blessings that you bring into our lives. We thank you for your hand this day as you've spoken to us, Lord, about prayer and prayer walking and letting you be our deliverer, and let you work in our lives, even if we don't see the outcome, because we're going to trust you. Lord, I pray for those in this room who need to make a decision of some kind. I don't know what that would be. God, speak to our hearts. Let us be faithful. In Jesus' name, amen. Let's stand together and sing a song of invitation. Maybe you need to make a decision of some time tonight. We wait for you briefly here.